We're chasing the shadows in a moment with Timothy Schultz. That's right, a ghost chaser. So get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let me tell you a little bit about Tim Schultz, a documentary filmmaker, a passion for entertaining. He's currently the president of the Denver-based independent production company, Bullhead Entertainment. Bullhead's diverse projects include animations, documentaries, short films, and the Mile High Horror Film Festival, which takes place each October in Denver. Here's Tim Schultz. Tim, you got to tell me about this film festival. It sounds great.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. This year was our inaugural year, and we had a pretty decent turnout, showing independent films from all over the world, horror films. In my opinion, horror films, independent ones, are the best that there are, because Hollywood films, a lot of them are really predictable, you know. So to put something out there that's independent, you know, it's not cliche, it's out of the box, and a lot of times they're really scary. And so I just started this festival in Denver to give the audience something new.
And, you know, they're scary because they're so lifelike, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm a big fan of psychological thrillers. There's a lot of different types of horror films, a lot of different genres. There's the slashers, you know, and then there's the psychological thrillers. There's just all kinds of, the horror subgenre has actually become really popular within the last few years, with the movie Saw and different films such as that. They get pretty graphic. So some people come for the gore, some people come for the zombies, some people come for the paranormal, you know? So, although, you know, what I've experienced from this documentary, Chasing the Shadows, is that it's really different. When you are doing a documentary and you're trying to be honest and film something how it really is, in Hollywood, you know, of course, they want to scare you. They really want to put something out there that's that's going to sell. And of course, you want to sell with the documentary, but you know, it's very different. It's not like it is in Hollywood when you go to a haunted location the majority of the time.
What are you shooting with these days? High def, and you got your own editing equipment and stuff.
These days we are shooting HD. We shot all kinds of different formats in the film. It was a four or five. We were actually in production for 4 years, so we used all kinds of different stuff and went all over the world to different locations known to be haunted. And I think that's one reason why this film is so different than a lot of what's out there, is because we did go to so many places that are known to be haunted. You can't just go to a place and turn the camera on and expect ghosts to start popping out of the woodwork. So
we wish that would happen that way, but it doesn't.
So it, you know, over a period of years, we just took the best of the best, and I think we put together a pretty compelling film.
Tell me about your interest in chasing ghosts. How'd that all start for you?
Well, I have always been fascinated by the paranormal and by what happens when we die, the question of that, and fascinated by ghosts, and it's the great unknown. And I've always been a fan of paranormal programming on television and in Hollywood, and I wanted to know how much was real and how much was fake. So, you know, what better way to find that out than to create your own film? And so basically, about 5 years ago, I started this documentary, and it started out as Haunted Colorado. And I just wanted to go around to all the different places in the state and, you know, see what I could find and see, you know, would people actually be possessed? Would I actually feel something or have an experience? You know, how much is actually real? So we took this camera crew and went all around the state. And, of course, the most famous place in the state of Colorado is the Stanley Hotel, which is inspired Stephen King's horror novel, classic novel, The Shining, which most people have heard about.
Okay.
And then Kubrick's movie, followed that with The Shining, which was, that's actually my favorite horror film of all time. I love it. But so we went there, and then it just expanded from there. And we ended up going down to St. Francisville, Louisiana, which is near New Orleans. And many people consider the Myrtle's Plantation, which is in St. Francisville, the most haunted house in America, or right up there. And it's had tons of media exposure. So that's the primary reason why we went there and ended up going to Africa, Benin, Africa, which is the birthplace of voodoo, and then over to Italy and interviewed some scientists who are doing state-of-the-art you know, research over there for the paranormal. So it was just fascinating.
Now, when you went out toward the Stanley Hotel, did you see anything there that scared you or anything like that?
I ended up spending the night in room 401, which at the time was considered the most haunted room of the hotel. Mm-hmm. And I had the camera rolling. I spent the night in this room by myself, and I did feel as if I was touched. I heard some noises.
And not touched by an angel either.
No, not touched by an angel. But, you know, having said that, when I went to the Stanley, it was set to be the conclusion of the film. I thought, you know, this is the place. This is the place that really captivates the world. I mean, it's one of the most intriguing places for paranormal phenomena on television and film. And so we went there, and I spent the night in this room. I had the cameras rolling. I was expecting something, you know, enormous to happen. I was expecting to get, I don't know, possessed or something broken, or, you know, I had no idea. But I did feel like I wasn't alone. I did feel as if I was touched. I heard footsteps, but nothing major happened. And so it wasn't the conclusion of the film that I was looking for, and I ended up shooting at many more locations. But it was an amazing, amazing place. It's in Estes Park, Colorado, and it's just an amazing, fascinating place. Stephen King actually wrote the majority of The Shining in the Stanley with his wife was there. They were the only two.
That was his inspiration, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was. And they were the only two in the hotel when it was written. So it's just a fascinating place.
What other places around Denver did you go, Timothy?
We went to one place with the Lumber Baron Inn, which is in the Highlands area of Denver, which was the site of a double homicide in the 1970s. So it was kind of gruesome. But we went to a couple mansions as well that were known to be haunted. We went to the Belvedere Theater, which is, I believe, the oldest theater west of the Mississippi. And there were a couple of deaths in and around the theater. And it was a very intriguing place.
Now, at these places, have there been, you know, beyond the deaths that occurred there, have there been reports of hauntings and scary things at these places? Or did you just go to places that had, you know, horror catastrophes occur?
We did go to places that had, you know, most places that are haunted, I think, sudden tragic death seemed to be a reoccurring theme. It's not very uplifting, but that seems to be what makes a place haunted. And so, you know, that was a common theme with practically every place we went. Even we went to a castle in Italy, the Bardi Castle, and there was just years, it's a medieval castle, and the years of torture and death. And these types of things are what makes a place haunted. And I don't necessarily think that a place is haunted because someone says it is, you know, because it's really well known or so forth. I think you need to experience something for yourself instead of taking somebody else's word for it. And I did have quite a few experiences in the film, but also, you know, there's a lot of places you go to where nothing happens, or the majority of the time nothing happens. We shot hundreds of hours of footage, and it's all, you know, boiled down into one documentary because we wanted to take the best of the best. And I think one reason why this film sticks out, this documentary, is because it's really an honest film. I just wanted to be honest because there's so much out there that is not honest. There's a lot of pressure out there on producers to supply, to get something very, very compelling. And luckily, I'm outside of the Hollywood system. I'm an independent production company. And so I don't have those pressures, and I could just tell it how it was, you know, and be honest. And
well, like that, some of these weekly reality shows, they got to come up with something every week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, there's real pressures out there to supply.
Did you conclude anything after doing the documentary, Timothy?
Yes.
Did you conclude anything about ghosts or the other side?
I did. I really, you know, a few things changed for me. And one is that, to me, ghosts aren't as scary as what I thought when I started this film. I mean, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be careful, but they're not quite as scary. I think you should be careful. But a ghost...
And there's a big difference between what you did, ghosts, and what some people might encounter, and that is demons, right?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, there is the negative side of it. And I do think it's important to be careful. We interviewed a demonologist, John Zaffis. Actually, his uncle,
good guy.
Yeah, Ed and Lorraine Warren were two of the only people to investigate the Amityville house.
Amityville house.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but he can tell you all about demons. I had a pretty lengthy interview with him.
He's one of the best.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. But you know, another thing I realized making this film, I think the majority of occurrences that people experience when it comes to ghosts are actually people that have crossed and come back. So it's a form of subtle energy. So if there's an electronic interference, TV shutting off, or different electronics is the main thing, because energy can manipulate energy, and something, you know, it just, people think that ghosts are just something to fear, and I personally do not, and that's really changed for me in this film, because I think a lot of the time it's just a loved one. I mean, if you can imagine being outside of your body, say you die, I mean, if you accept just for a second that ghosts are real,
mm-hmm.
and if you accept that you're going to live when you leave your body, then,
that's a little weird all by itself, isn't it?
Yeah, wouldn't you want to come back and tell your loved ones that you're okay? So the way you don't have a vocal cord, you can't just talk like we're talking to each other right now. So, you know, subtle smells, or, you know, maybe a touch or a dream or electronic interference. Some of these things really terrify people. And I think a lot of it has to do with what's in our media today. But I think a lot of the time it's innocent people that have died that want you to know that they're okay.
So they move objects, they do whatever they do because they can't freely just talk to you. But be that as it may, were you able to capture any EVP sounds at all?
Yeah, we sure were. One device in the film I thought was very interesting. And by the way, I'm in this film, I'm not taking sides. I'm just documenting people. I clearly do believe in life after death and in ghosts, but I don't necessarily believe in everything that someone tells me or every place that I go to and so forth. It was
you didn't approach this as Mr. Skeptic, right?
Right. Yeah. But I don't accept it necessarily when I walk into a place either.
Okay. But, so you want some proof.
Try to be objective about it.
Yeah. Okay.
And not take sides. But at any rate, the EVP was pretty stunning to me, because there's a device that I'm sure you've probably heard about, but some people call it the telephone to the dead, also known as, the Frank's box. And taking this device into some places, we followed a team of investigators who are using this, and I was convinced that some of this indeed was spirits communicating, trying to communicate. A lot of it is radio signals. What it is this device that it fluctuates the radio frequencies, and the theory is that spirits can manipulate the resonance of the sound to make a coherent sound. And a lot of the time it is radio that comes through, in my opinion. But some of the time, I mean, there are curse words coming over there. I heard my name called. And things like that, really, I don't understand how it could just be a coincidence. And so it's pretty impressive to me.
And that ought to take you back a little bit when you hear something calling your name and there's nobody in the room, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There was one occasion, we were at the Belvedere Theater, and it was actually in between shoots. We did have one camera running. It was about 20 feet behind the device. And I was just walking around and near the device, and I heard what I thought was my name. It said Tim. And I was like, that did not just say Tim. So I started walking closer to it, and then Timothy. You know, so I got really close. It really caught my attention. And then finally, I say, is there anyone there that wants to communicate with me? And the spirit says, Mike, like, like that. I mean, it sounds kind of cheesy, but it said Mike. And so I said, Mike, is it, you know, is there anything you want to tell me? He said, get out. And that really raised the hair on the back of my neck. And I felt, I was legitimately scared, and it takes a lot to scare me.
And you sent a crew out to look into voodoo also, didn't you?
Yes, yes. When I was in the Myrtles Plantation, one of the stories that surrounds that plantation is a story of voodoo. It has ties to voodoo. It's near New Orleans, down in Louisiana. Uh-huh. So it's part of the culture down there. And I wanted to know the real deal about voodoo. You know, how much was real and how much was fake, and really what it was all about. So I sent a crew to the birthplace of voodoo, which is Benin, Africa. And I should back up and say about 30 million people in West Africa practice voodoo. So it's not this little thing. I mean, many, many people practice it. And it's just really the West, the Western world, I don't think understands it. I didn't understand it until we sent a crew there. And we did capture some possession rituals as well as some animal sacrificial rituals, which, you know, is very controversial. And they do use the animals for food and so forth. They use all the parts of the animal, so it's not like they're just slaughtering it for nothing. But the reason they do that is, you know, goats and such and birds. They believe that by doing this, the gods will give them good harvest or children, you know, these really positive things. And I really was hesitant to initially send a crew to Benin to capture some of this voodoo stuff, you know, because of I bought into the Western way that this is really evil stuff and this is, you know, this is scary. I hope they're okay. But people there were very, very hospitable and very, very friendly. And
well, voodoo, really, you know, I was told to him by some folks from Haiti and they live in Los Angeles now, but that voodoo is truly, it's for them, a very important religion.
Yeah.
That it is not evil. They're not trying to have people die or anything like that. In that, you know, so then I asked him, I says, well, tell me about sticking pins into little doll replicas of people.
Yeah.
And he said, no, you don't understand. Years ago, when the media started coming to Haiti to do stories on voodoo, what we do with the dolls is we make them up like the people we care about, and we would put their names on the body, and we would use the pin to keep the name in there. And apparently the media saw that and figured they're sticking these people with needles to stab them in their real life. And that's, and then in Hollywood took over again, and that's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a big difference between what we see in our media here and what actually is happening over there. Although some people do take it very seriously in the negative light too. Many people, the place where we shot in Benin is actually feared by the locals, and many people are just, you know, they're scared of the fetishers, the voodoo priests over there.
Well, absolutely. We're going to talk with you about orbs when we come back in a moment, Tim, on Coast to Coast AM. And our guest this hour, Timothy Schultz, we're talking about his work, Chasing the Shadows, his film. We'll find out where you can see it in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Timothy Schultz with us. Timothy, first of all, the movie, Chasing the Shadows, where can we see this?
Anyone can pick it up at chasingtheshadows.com. We actually just released it worldwide, so anyone around the world can pick it up right now. Previously, it's just been available in North America for the last month or so. So chasingtheshadows.com. Right now, they are 50% off. It's $12.47 per DVD, which is half off the regular price. Also, we have an extended bonus footage DVD that we just released, which is 73 minutes, and that's $19.99 per DVD at chasingtheshadows.com. And eventually, we hope to get it on some television stations as well.
Absolutely. And you know what? You might get picked up by one of the cable networks. You never know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We hope so. You know, we definitely hope so. It's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's been 4 or 5 years now of work. So
that's a long time, Tim.
Yeah, yeah.
It is. Now definitely. Tell me, you explore the subject of orbs. What have you come away from thinking about orbs?
You know, orbs are one of the most controversial things in the field of the paranormal. And I learned all about him in this film. And it started out, I was with a team of investigators, and they, you know, are adamant that orbs are indeed spiritual activity. Not all of them, you know, they try to differentiate between dust and spirit. And I've also interviewed a quantum physicist who believes that some of them are indeed spirits. And some of the faces in these things are pretty stunning to me, you know. But when I was in Italy, I also interviewed some scientists over there, and two of them, you know, are a couple of the most famous parapsychologists in Italy, and they do not believe that the majority of orbs are spirits. They think that the reflection of particles in the air, you know, in other words, dust. And personally, what I believe, I honestly don't know what, you know, I honestly don't know. I'm undecided. I think a lot of it is dust, but, you know, some of them could be spirits. I'm open-minded. I think it's important not to be closed-minded. I mean, some of them, the faces in some of them are pretty impressive, but I have other experts say that they're just dust. So, you know, my main thing that I did with this film was just document it and see what the controversy is and see why people think what. And so that's part of the film. I thought it was pretty interesting.
After coming away from this, after 4 years, what is your premise now? I mean, what is your take on ghosts, and what do you think these are?
I think ghosts are, you know, the majority of them are people that have died and come back. But some of them at haunted locations, in my opinion, are people that have died, usually suddenly, tragically, that it leaves a mark. Part of your energy, part of these people's energy is stuck at this place. And in my opinion, that's what a lot of the hauntings are. You know, a spirit that is either afraid to leave because they don't want to go, you know, to the other side, or they, for whatever reason, they just don't want to leave, you know? So that's my opinion. But also a lot of them, I think, are not ghosts as well. I think our imagination can do funny things. And I think it's important to be skeptical as well when you look at this type of stuff. Don't just take someone's word for it. Experience it for yourself. And then make up your own mind. It's kind of like the Apostle Thomas from the story from the Bible, you know, the doubting Thomas. He did not believe in Jesus' resurrection until he felt the wound for himself. And I think there's truth in that idea, whether or not you believe in the Bible or not. Truth in the idea that for a lot of people, it's tough to believe something unless you experience it for yourself. And we actually did an animation a couple years ago of The Cave, an adaptation of Plato's allegory in clay, which is basically the same type of story. Prisoners are chained their whole life, and they stare at the wall, and they see these shadows go across the wall, and that's their whole reality. They make their meaning from these things. This is all they know. And then one day, one of the prisoners is released from this cave, and he sees that the shadows are actually being cast by villagers and people walking by, and a fire is behind them casting the shadow on the wall. So he sees what's actually casting the shadow. So his whole world changes because he sees, you know, what these shadows really are. So he goes back in to tell the others, and they don't believe him. They think he's crazy, and, you know, because they haven't experienced it for themselves. So I think there's a lot of truth in that, and I'm the same way. I have to experience something for myself to actually believe it a lot of the time.
A lot of people are interested these days, Timothy, in going out ghost hunting. They, you know, they want to do it for fun. Some are serious. Well, what advice would you give them?
I would say just, you know, be careful, but also don't give up, because you're not, the majority of the time, you're not going to walk into a haunted place and flip on a camera and ghosts aren't just going to come popping out of the woodwork. I mean, that's how it is shown on television and in Hollywood, but that's not the reality in the majority of places. And so be patient, be open-minded, and be respectful. That's what I would say. I mean, if you accept that a ghost is something that's real, then if you accept that it's a human being that's not in a body, then, you know, you should be respectful. That's my opinion.
What kind of equipment should people take with them?
Well, there's a wide variety of stuff out there for EVP and cameras. I would definitely recommend cameras that do night shot, you know, infrared if you can get your hands on it. Different recorders, if you can get your hands on a radio EVP type device that uses white noise, I highly recommend that. There's really a lot out there. And also, if you have a medium that you think is gifted, I mean, that's always a plus. We interviewed a few different people that were psychic. And
how do you weed through that?
Well, I just, you know, some people I really were very believable, and some people were not. But I just documented it, and we tried to take the best of the best. One lady we flew out named Vicki Monroe, and she's assisted police in cases before. And so, you know, she has a credible track record. I interviewed another woman that was a former police commissioner of a town in Colorado who's a medium, and the mother of an investigator was also a medium. So it's really a wide variety of people. There's another guy that he says that he's a tarot reading wizard. And he basically told me that, first of all, we went into this haunted mansion in Capitol Hill area of Denver called the Croke Patterson. And the attic door was open just slightly. And he basically was telling me that the ghosts were hiding in the attic because they only come out at night when no one's around and no one can, you know, no one is around, no one can see them, and they only come out at night. And so we got into this kind of scuffle about it on the camera, and it was, I don't know. I mean, who's to say? Maybe he's right.
Maybe he is.
Yeah.
You don't believe, though, that ghosts are something to fear?
I do not. I do not believe that ghosts are something to fear. I think it's important to be careful, but, you know, it's definitely not something to fear. And that's one of the things that's changed with me and my belief system since I started this project. I used to be terrified of walking into a haunted house or of spirit possession or, you know, communication with the dead. It used to really, really scare me, mostly because of what I've seen in the media. But it's really not very scary. And I think, in my opinion, people can scare themselves, or ghosts, if they see that you're getting scared, then maybe it could egg them on, you know? I think some of them are kind of mischievous.
Now, in your documentary, you did not cover exorcisms, did you?
We did not. We tried to. When we were in Italy, we tried to interview a couple priests over there, and they are actually, they're very secretive about...
Yeah, they don't like to talk, do they?
No, they don't. But we really wanted to, so perhaps in the next film. But it's very fascinating, the whole subject of exorcisms. And
and possession, as you know, Timothy, very different from a ghostly apparition.
Yes. Yeah, the spirit actually inhabiting a body, it is pretty scary. The ones that we documented in Africa, actually, they were doing it as a positive way of communicating with the deceased. So they would do it to seek messages from a higher power and so forth. So it wasn't the evil, you know, girl strapped in a bed with her head turning backwards. But I know there are some pretty scary cases out there, and it's really an interesting subject.
All right, let's go to some of the calls here. We'll go to Bellingham, Washington. Matt, you're with us on Coast to Coast. Question, story. Go ahead, Matt.
Hi, good evening. I was just sitting here listening. I used to live in a Tibetan monastery in Woodstock, New York, which is up on the mountain there. And I lived there for a year. And the Tibetans are very have a lot of stuff on ghosts. They call them a la. It's like a spirit, a soul. Mm-hmm. And when somebody dies, the la can remain behind, and it doesn't necessarily have a consciousness, but it still remains on the planet. Sometimes it can even inhabit plants or trees, which is why if you're going to cut down a tree, you need to, try to get any entities that might be living within it out of it before. I mean, that's stuff they do before they build a monastery and stuff like that. Hmm. But one thing I was also going to say is, while I was in the monastery there, they had one of the yogis came to visit, who had been one of the cave meditators for 30 years until he kept getting visions from the Dalai Lama to go start teaching around the world because the world needed it. And so he was visiting just for one day there, and he was sitting at the head of the main abbot table there. And I walked by, and I didn't see anyone sitting there. But it was very blurry to me, and then I kind of rubbed my eyes, and then suddenly he was sitting there. And I thought I was kind of losing my mind because he was there in an instant, and then somebody a couple days later said that they saw the same exact thing. And so I was just thinking of what you were talking about before about the energy. You know, it's he's more energy now than solid, it appeared, you know, and he could come and go as he pleased.
Yeah.
In these locations, Tim, that you were in, did you see anything like that?
Some people did see some shadows, and in one place there's a photograph that was pretty stunning in the same place that someone had died, and that's a theory about ghosts, that some of them can stay in a certain place and they repeat the same thing over and over again. So it is very interesting. And the whole Tibetan belief is fascinating as well, with the sky burial, with these huge, I don't know if you've ever seen one, but these huge crows descend on a body and pretty much devour it and take the parts and fly away, and it goes back to the earth. And, you know, it could be beautiful or gruesome depending on how you want to look at it. But the whole Tibetan belief system, I think, is really, really fascinating.
Well, and they've, like the Egyptians, they have the Tibetan Book of the Dead. They have that specific belief system. When you were doing your four-year investigation, did you ever come across any children, ghostly children?
Well, children were, yes, I did. And in the Stanley Hotel on the fourth floor, it's one of the main ghost stories they have there of children playing with a ball that can be heard in the hallway.
You hear the ball bouncing?
I did not, but that's one of the big stories that people talk about all the time there. So I think it's fairly frequent. But in another location, the Peabody Mansion in Capitol Hill area of Denver, there's also, it's rumored that a girl was killed there. And we did have quite a few experiences at the Peabody. It's an amazing place. We actually ended up editing there. I was inspired, so I decided to do post-production there. We edited the film.
That's gutsy. I don't know if that's smart, foolish, or gutsy, Tim.
Yeah. We had some weird things happen, that's for sure.
You didn't do any Ouija board stuff, did you?
No.
Good.
I wanted to just as a way to, I wanted to show.
Your cameras would have broken, believe me.
Yeah. Yeah, I personally don't like Ouija boards because I think that, you know, it kind of opens up a door that you may not always be able to control, and the spirit can lie to you. Some people think they're just toys and, you know, nonsense anyway, but I've had some pretty weird experience with them in the past, and I choose not to use them, but if someone else does, that's fine. But at this place where we edited the film, I was in a heated argument with my editor one time about the storyline of the film. He wanted to do one thing, and I wanted to do the other. And all of a sudden, we're in this little room that's about 10 feet by 10 feet. It's just this little office.
Small little edit suite.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we heard this huge clapping noise, like this huge clap right in front of us. No
like
windows
this?
Were open.
One of those?
Yeah. And no windows were open, and no vents in the room. And it just really freaked me out. And immediately, we stopped our arguing. But it's known for poltergeist activity, that place.
Let's go to Victor, Houston, Texas. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Victor, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Hey, I've been working nights for a long time, and I was in 97, I was working at a private school, the all-girls Catholic school. And while I was there, there was a nun that had cancer, and she was terminally ill. She was going to pass away. And one night, I guess the week that she passed away, I was sitting there about 3 o'clock in the morning. It was kind of hot. I seen these two nuns walking under the light. they were dressed in the old-fashioned Catholic nun outfit. But while I was there in that school, the nuns never dressed like that. And so it caught me off guard that I saw these two nuns at 3 in the morning on a Sunday morning walking towards the convent. And so I went down to where, you know, because I'm the security, and I ran down there to see where they, you know, walked to. And they left no footprints. And about that time the nun passed away, I seen those two nuns. And then I saw another strange thing. I saw this sort of like oval-shaped shadow in one of the trees sitting there. And it's sort of like something was like in the middle of the shadow, but I couldn't make it out. And it sort of disappeared. And I'm not one. I've been working nights for a long time in different locations, and I've never seen anything, only in this place, because this place had a theater also that I would cut the lights off, and the lights would come back on by themselves in different locations. And so I like, you know, talk about ghosts. Yeah, I've seen ghosts. That's like first time I've seen them. And when I tell people though that story, they always say, oh, you were probably sleeping or doing something. I know what I saw, and it's still in my head.
You're a believer, Victor, aren't you?
Oh, believe me. I've been working nights now for more than 10 years, and, you know, I don't see strange things very often, but this place had that creepy feeling.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah. And we people of the night see strange things. Did you ever come across any mischievous ghosts, Tim? Pranksters?
Mischievous ghosts. We did have quite a few camera malfunctions with anything with batteries. Had quite a few things run out. At one point, a computer was shut off on its own. And even when we were editing this film, actually, I was sitting there talking to my editor once again, and a pop bottle flew off the window was shut, by the way, but a pop bottle flew off the windowsill and hit the space bar. And in the film, there's this guy named Banjo Billy who gives ghost tours. We kind of wanted to show the whole culture of ghosts and the paranormal and be really well-rounded. So anyway, this guy does ghost tours on a bus in Boulder, Colorado. And so we edited this piece, and throughout the whole piece, there's nothing about ghosts. This really short piece, except for this one line. And he goes, you know, if you look to the left, there's the first fire department in Boulder, and it's haunted by a ghost named George. And that's the only time it says anything about a ghost.
And it would be named George, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But the space bar was at the beginning of the piece, and the pop bottle flew off and hit the space bar. And rather than playing at the beginning of the piece, it started playing right there. So if you look to the left, there's the first fire department in Boulder, haunted by a ghost named George. And maybe you had to be there, but it really freaked me out.
Well, it is. The name of the film, Chasing the Shadows, by Timothy Schultz and his group. It took 4 years to put this project together. And his website, chasingtheshadows.com, linked up for you right now at coasttocoastam.com. Ghosts and haunted locations. Up next, we'll be talking to you about your ghostly and unusual stories. Get ready. We'll be right back.